4. When in doubt. It's the third. So the same wet-eyed flunkey they sent to him 2 months ago had said this time, and that meant it was Harry's job to heave himself bum-bum along the path that led to Malfoy's house and through the rooms to the cold lair he kept. Harry gritted his teeth and swore under his breath as his leg dragged on the floor. He wanted to pause and rest, but the vampire who opened the door for him had stared at him with blue eyes that had more than a hint of grey in them, and said, "The Lord is waiting for you." So he went, and its stupid leg that had chosen to get itself wounded by a stray curse could just drag behind him. He paused outside the throne room and adjusted the hang of his cloak. Too much to hope that Malfoy wouldn't smell the dried blood on his skin. He hadn't had time to clean up before he was summoned. What Harry could do was make sure he carried this off magnificently, so much so that other people would pause and goggle at him when they heard of it. So he strode into the room, looking neither left nor right, and made his way to his chair first. Then he turned around and looked up at Malfoy's throne, half prepared to bow already. Malfoy wasn't there. Harry paused, aware of his living heart filling his ears with blood and buzz and sound. Then he moved to the left. He was in time to avoid one arm that came down trying to pin him, but not the other, which sneaked around his shoulders and then his chest and tucked him in close. Harry bowed his head and rammed his forehead into Malfoy's inner arm. He might as well not have. Malfoy might not feign being marble well, but his skin did. Bleeding from the forehead, dazed, bruised, Harry heard Malfoy inhale and then whisper in his ear, "Tell me why I should not eat you." "Because they would get some infinitely more annoying aura to replace me," Harry said, staring into the darkness. He wobbled, but Malfoy held him upright. It was even kind of nice to have someone to lean on, considering his leg. He banished that thought as soon as he realized he was having it and added, "They were talking about it today. They are not satisfied that I haven't brought you down in a hail of fire yet. Someone else would probably bring about the conflict between your flock and the ministry a lot more efficiently." There was a pause, and then Malfoy turned him around. Harry went with it easily, now that he knew what to expect, and cast a nonverbal cleaning charm on the way to remove the blood from his skin. Malfoy sniffed him, next to his cheek and then his throat, and kept his mouth there while he spoke. "And you think I value your life enough to spare it?" "I only know that I've survived 3 meetings so far, and that you seem to want to keep your flock out of the fire," Harry retorted, balanced in a way that would let him burn the hell out of Malfoy before he died. "If you kill me, you kill yourself too, and leave your flock leaderless and ready for a negotiator who can work the new leader like a legitimate. That would be a bad thing." "Still thinking you can burn me before I drain you dry," Malfoy whispered and nuzzled in so that Harry could sense the edges of his fangs, the way he would sense a wall in a dark room before he banged into it. "You are intolerably cute, Potter." Harry grinned and poised himself. Malfoy shifted his muscles, and the drear purr croon came bubbling out of his throat. Harry lunged. Malfoy's arm that wasn't around his shoulders seized his hand and pinned it to his side, his wand pointing down along his ribs. Harry heard the warning creak of the wood and knew that Malfoy might break his wand. He froze. "That's better," Malfoy said, and his voice darkened and deepened to the point that Harry wouldn't have been surprised to hear Knight speak in a tone like it. "Now, why should I spare you? You came in here weak and limping, smelling of blood. The ministry tossed you my way like a gift. And you should know that the ministry only gives poisoned meat." Harry murmured, eyes half closed, flexing his muscles in small twitches to test the strength of the vampire's hold that he knew Malfoy would feel. "So ask yourself why I came in here like a gift, and you will find the answer to your first question." Malfoy paused. Then he drew his head back. His eyes met Harry's. Harry stared into them, into swirling gray and black, and held his position. No matter how long Malfoy looked at him, he was still in the middle of a throne room being held by a vampire who felt like a granite spider not falling into an abyss of pleasure or whatever Malfoy wanted him to be. "Why are you so resistant to this?" Malfoy whispered. Harry tried to shrug, but Malfoy's arm held him too firmly for that, so he did his best to answer lightly. "For the same reason that I'm resistant to the Imperius curse, I think. I'm too stubborn. Someone tries to tell me that it would be a good idea to do what they order me to, and I don't think it is." Malfoy laughed, a sound like dust choking, and released him. Harry turned, keeping Malfoy in view as he walked towards the throne. Malfoy paused near the bottom step and cocked his head at Harry. "You should have known better than to come here wounded," he said. "You should have known what a temptation you would be to me. And you had no way of knowing whether I had fed recently or not. I could have ripped you to pieces for the heat in your veins before considering the political consequences." Again with the overconfidence and the big talking, Harry said, shaking his head, "You can't fool me. Would someone who can place other needs above his hunger have become the leader of a flock of vampires strong enough to worry the ministry? Would someone who's heard my warnings dump them all by the wayside and spring on me without considering all the consequences?" Malfoy stared at him for a moment, his fangs reacting. "I don't know whether you're complimenting or insulting me," he said at last. "I leave that exercise for the listener," Harry said and gave him a small bow. The rush in his veins was enough to obscure the pain in his leg. It wasn't often a vampire or even some of the people he worked with would unbend like this, which made the consideration a gift. Like the gift Malfoy had already given him, of saying that Harry was the best aura he could imagine as their negotiator until a properly trained one came along. He looked back up to find Malfoy utterly still, poising on the edge of what seemed to be a scent trail. "What?" Harry asked. "You weren't lying," Malfoy whispered. "You feel honored to be here. You are capable of feeling honored to be here." "I should have known he would smell my emotions." Harry nodded with a faint smile. I did try to tell you that I treated humans and vampires alike, unless they were trying to kill someone." Malfoy half lowered his head as if to guard his throat. "I did just try to kill you." "You threatened," Harry said. "You didn't try. I have the feeling I would have known if you'd tried." Malfoy smiled this time, the way that humans might smile, although of course his fangs still projected, and Harry would have been stupid to forget who and what he faced. "You are a temptation then," he said, "in other ways than just the blood." Harry put his eyebrows up, but Malfoy didn't explain what he meant, and Harry decided not to pursue it. "So," he said, shifting around and looking at his chair over his shoulder, "what do you want to discuss?" "This month? Nothing." Malfoy licked his bottom lip, and Harry found himself waiting for him to lick the upper, but it didn't come. "You have given me enough to think about, including the vague hints of news you dispense." "I haven't heard anything solid, such as a date the ministry might prepare to move against you," Harry said softly. "I would have told you that." "I know," Malfoy said, and his voice grew strange. Not the burble purr, but deeper in another way. "That is what makes you so valuable." Harry thought he knew, then. Malfoy meant he was an actual channel to share information, not an aura who would keep it to himself, whether or not he should, simply because he hated all vampires. He nodded and flashed Malfoy a smile. "Then take care, Malfoy. I'll see you next month. Use a salve that contains comfrey on your leg," Malfoy said, "or I will know." He stepped into the shadows that seemed to cluster around the throne and was gone. "Comfrey is less offensive to your nostrils than my natural scent, right?" Harry called after him. "Wrong," said the voice that could come from everywhere and nowhere. Harry went, blinking and off balance, in more ways than one. Turning and turnings. Draco lay back in the throne with his eyes closed, his senses curled through the air, seeking and finding, bringing and dragging closer, the thick scent of fire, dust, something like rainwater, something that had taken Draco longer than it should have to connect with the appearance of wetness on someone's cheeks, and a swirling wind to steer it all. Potter was not coming quietly. He sat up and leaned forwards as Potter stepped into the room, then froze where he was. Potter smelled no different, his emotions still dancing around him in currents so thick they were practically visible. But when he looked up and saw Draco, those emotions intensified until Draco regretted the breath he would have to draw in to speak. And not only because breathing made it harder for him to smell the blood that frummed beneath Potter's skin. You come here for more reasons than because it's the third of the month, he said. Potter nodded. Yes. He strode over to his chair without taking his eyes off Draco. Draco watched the roll of the muscles in his leg. The way his stride accomplished exactly what it was meant to as far as the length of the steps was concerned, and felt his muscles move down in response. Potter had used the comfrey as he was told to. That he would take orders was another point in his favor, and Draco saw no reason to speak to the ministry about a more highly trained aura. Tell me then, Draco said. He had sharpened his voice until the command emerged like a flint arrowhead, and it appeared to strike Potter as hard. He closed his eyes for a moment before he sat down, and the invisible storm around him, invisible to all but the vampire's senses, that was, rose higher, until it towered over him like a cloud with lightning at its heart. Draco twisted his head to the side. Someone who could take orders was an asset, yes, but Draco did not wish it to go too far. There was no Potter leash quivering in his mind that bound him to the man as his others bound him to his flock, and he did not wish there to be. Potter's yielding was worthless if done out of sheer languor, irritation, or anything but the most willing fixation on Draco. All right, Potter whispered. I did something that was probably stupid. No, I know it was stupid, but I executed every step of the plan, knowing that, and I know that you'll want someone to replace me as a negotiator. No one can, Draco said. The ministry won't waste anyone in a position they think as worthless as this one. He did not bother to point out the other reason, that the ministry had created this position in the first place as a punishment for Potter. If you ask for someone else, Potter forced his eyes open and met his gaze in a moment before his face slanted away. Last month, that would have pleased Draco. Now, the thought that Potter would look away for some other reason than because Draco's eyes and will were too much for him made his chest cramp with the pressure of his rage. He kept still. He had learned how to keep still early on, when it meant the difference between blood and hunger. This might be a difference that mattered as much in the end. Tell me what you did, he said. Potter sighed and crossed his legs, still no difference in the pull of the muscles when he did that, Draco noted. Good. He had given Potter his advice for a reason. I looked up records, he said. From the war? The ministry archives have no information on my flock. Draco had made sure of that in the time he sent Orton, the youngest of his vampires, to seduce the current archivist. Not now, Potter admitted. They have older records on some of you, if you know where to look for the information. He hesitated, then added, such as records from approximately 8 years ago, when the war was, everyone thought, over and people were traveling back home. Draco stood, He didn't rush down from the throne, because he had done that before, and Potter would now expect emotion. He looked, and Potter glanced aside again. The emotion that swirled around him this time was the choking hot dust Draco had already sniffed once before. Shame. He had rarely smelled it so strong. Draco came down the steps of the throne, but slowly. He could be a leopard springing after his prey. He could also be a wolf, tracking it with endurance. Potter drew himself up and ducked his head. "Tell me what you did," Draco said for the third time, and held the demand out in the air like he knew. Potter walked into it. The sound of his scalp cut through the room, and then he was hanging, his shame suspended enough to obey. It was not such a first taste of his obedience as Draco had promised himself, but there were other first tastes to come. He stood at the bottom of the steps and watched Potter. "I found the vampire who turned you," Potter said. "Older vampire, called himself Yasin, at that point. He kept you for 3 months, didn't he? Enough time to break you, he thought. And then you managed to get away when one of his meals turned out to be harder to subdue than he thought. He won, but by that point he was weakened and had lost control of you. And you found your wand and became a wizard again." Draco moved a step closer. If Potter had brought the vampire in, subjected him to trial, and others would learn the circumstances of those 3 months, and the cold, and the rush of dark waters closing over his head, and the hunger. "I killed him," Potter said. "I locked him in a box and starved him for 3 nights. And then I tied him out under the sunrise." Draco paused. The words swayed through him like a breeze swaying through leaves. He stepped back. Potter turned to him, and now the fire was visible in his eyes as well as his scent, and he had no trouble meeting Draco's eyes, or holding his will, or obeying the order to speak the truth. "I knew that you would hate me for it. If you have left him alive this long, either you wanted him alive, or you wanted to find him and kill him yourself one day. But I did it. I read the records, and I talked to someone who knew what it would probably be like for a new vampire that just got turned for a lark. And then I killed him." Draco took a step nearer again. Potter drew his wand. Draco let his hiss build slowly, wavering up and down the scale before it became a croon. He moved nearer again, and Potter jerked his wand into fighting stance. Draco raised his hand slowly, making sure every movement could be seen, and laid his fingers along Potter's wrist. The pulse rebounding under his touch nearly broke his concentration. "What?" Potter demanded, and pulled him back. Draco let his nostrils flare open in an obvious sniff, but with his head this far away from Potter's throat, he didn't smell everything that he wanted to. That was no hardship, not when Potter's emotions and sweat once again carried him high. Not when the sound of Potter's heartbeat filled Draco with dizzying, dancing joy. "You did that for me," Draco said. "Not because it would place you higher in the ministry. Not because Yasin was a personal enemy, Not because it would give you some standing with the flock. You thought it wouldn't. You thought I would hate you forever. And you still did it. Potter sneered this time. He should know better than that, Draco thought. He had no fang to display. Yes, that's the reason I know you're going to turn your back on me. He reached into his pocket, and as he already had his wand out, Draco let him. Here's a list of orders you could ask the Ministry to replace me and have a chance of getting. Most of them are good. He fell silent as Draco came closer, never pressing in more than a pace or two. He didn't need to. He could feel Potter's emotions on his skin, taste the warmth, see the pulse fluttering in his throat, hear it in his wrist, smell the blood. Potter turned with him as Draco trod a cycle around him, and still his heartbeat and his blood crooned back and his skin called Draco. You did that for me, Draco said. Potter's mouth crimped, ending the sneer. Yeah, are you saying that you're not angry? I forgot Jacinth, Draco said. I would have remembered him someday and paid the debt. But you did it. He paused then and bent his head towards Potter without moving his body. For me. Potter nodded once, mouth crimping even more, eyes dark. You will do other things, Draco breathed, voice stroking Potter as his hands and fangs could not. For me, when you want to do them. He stepped back and watched Potter. This time, Potter could not meet his eyes again, but this time it was not shame. You want me to stay as a negotiator, Potter said. He tried to make it a question, but he couldn't. Not when he could read, in his own way, what thrummed between them as well as Draco could. I want you to, Draco said. And you will. Potter stared at him, then shook his head. I didn't know vampires cared that much about wanting. Draco said nothing. Surely Potter would figure it out. The rarity of a vampire taking a victim who was completely willing rather than in need of money or hypnotized by their eyes. And remember the value rarity added. Potter said, and ran his hand through his hair. Was there anything else you wanted to discuss, Malfoy? No, Draco said, and watched him. Potter did not flee the room, because he was not stupid. He did not turn his head back to watch Draco either, because he was not afraid. But the air around him smelled of straining wire, this time, and sweat, and blood. And his back was stiff, but not his leg, Draco noticed. And he stood there when Potter was gone, tasting blood in the air and fire. And Venegans and Desire. We'll be right back. The sixth. The lair. It's the third. This time the flunky's red eyes had darted away from him. Harry had known why. He had smiled and nodded and resisted the temptation to draw his wand or crush the parchment of the report he was working on until the flunky had shut the door behind him, and even then he had smoothed out the parchment after a moment and gone on working, because he knew that someone would watch his rubbish for signs of such temper. He walked into Malfoy's mansion the same way he always did when not wounded, hand not far from his wand, head half inclined, eyes watching the shadows. He made it to the throne room without stopping, but he paused inside the doorway, the sight of another vampire on the dais striking him as heavily as a blow to the throat. Then he saw the way the vampire knelt, its head bowed in the way a dog might use when being scolded, and Malfoy's long white fingers sweeping back and forth against the vampire's black hair, as bright as magnesium in the darkness. Malfoy still sat on the throne, and he was the one who had a slight sheen of blood on his fangs, the one whose head moved around, and the one whose eyes still looked the way they should, without a taint of another color. "Only you would be relieved to see a vampire who's fed recently," Harry thought, and released a sigh that he hoped would be soundless even to Malfoy's ears. Perhaps Hermione had been right when she told him the other day that she thought the negotiator position might be making him more sympathetic to vampires, and not always in the good sense of the word. "Lord Malfoy," he said, and tried to keep his voice quiet, as much out of respect for the kneeling vampire as for Malfoy. There was something about that utter submissive arch of the neck that got to him. "I have something to speak to you about." "The same subject I have to speak to you about, no doubt." Malfoy gestured, his hand bending upwards with a grace of a swaying palm branch, and the kneeling vampire rose and bowed. Malfoy nodded to him, and he backed away from the throne, body still frozen in the half bow. When he reached the stairs down from the throne, he took them as if he hovered on marionette strings, and never turned, even when he reached the door. Harry lightly clenched his fists. He had known that Malfoy had killed Duncan, the member of his flock who had spied for the ministry, and he had seen the unnatural grey in the eyes of the vampire who had opened the door for him a few months ago. But this was the first time he had actually seen Malfoy exercising his power over someone else. "It bothers you," Malfoy said, and sniffed the air as he said it. What he smelled there made him freeze with his head on one side. Harry met his eyes and thought the arch of his neck this way really wasn't that different from the arch of the other vampires as it knelt. "No," he said, "it should, but it doesn't." He hesitated, then decided that he might as well say the thought bubbling behind his lips. It probably wouldn't give him any peace until he did anyway. "I don't think it's too different from some of the aura tricks that I use, the power I exercise." "You have the power to imprison," Malfoy said, and leaned back and crossed his legs on the arm of the throne. It was more than grace when he did it. He moved as if he didn't have bones in his knees. Harry felt his throat dry out. He's dead, but he doesn't move like a corpse, he thought, which meant the fort hadn't accomplished what it was meant to. To kill, to hold someone indefinitely. There are laws about that, Harry began, and Malfoy flicked in a glance that slid over his face like an icicle bound to bare skin. Harry paused and then added, in theory, in practice we do have the power to do that, yes, especially someone like me. Malfoy laughed, a sound that got everywhere up and down Harry's skin, like the claws of rats hooked beneath his shirt. There is no one like you, Potter. Harry held his breath for a count of three. The slight discomfort in his chest took his thoughts away from Malfoy's laughter and reminded him what he was here for. He shook his head and settled into the chair that Malfoy kept ready for him. It was strange to think of anything in a vampire's house as belonging to him, but this seemed to do. Other things could too. Harry clenched his jaw and held his breath for a count of six this time. That was the kind of thought that would lead to other thoughts, that would lead to actions like the one he had come here to discuss with Malfoy. Malfoy swung back upright and stared at him. Speak, he said. Harry stifled a brief burst of stupid gratitude, like a firework in his chest, that Malfoy could sense his emotions well enough to react like that. Yeah, it's because he's a vampire. They can all do that. Get over it. One of your flock attacked one of my auras, he said quietly. Dyerson, young kid, just finding his feet. He obeyed the rules, I would swear. The vampire used the thrall on him. Malfoy didn't fold his arms across his chest, or hiss, or snap, or do anything else that Harry thought he would do. He had carried mourning with him into the house, mourning he shouldn't have had, the same kind of mourning he had used last month, when he had thought Malfoy would toss him out or try to kill him or simply request someone else because Harry had killed his sire. He shouldn't mourn if Malfoy grew angry about this either. Dyerson was the innocent in this situation. He would recover from the loss of blood, eventually. It would be harder to recover from the marks of fangs in his throat. Those feeding scars usually didn't go away, and would earn Dyerson taunts for years about being the kind of addicted idiot who sold his blood to vampires. Malfoy said, "The vampire who attacked him is called Franklin. That was the one you saw in here just now. I was tasting him. I can see his memories that way. I know why he attacked Dyerson." Harry closed his eyes, then snapped them open again. Malfoy had refrained from attacking him before. That didn't mean he always would. And Harry would be stupid to ask Malfoy to act against his nature. If Malfoy chose to do so, it was a gift, one he gave without the asking. Why? Because your aura carried a potion in his bloodstream that would enchant any vampire as young and empty-headed as Franklin, Malfoy said calmly. Whether the aura knew he'd been dosed by it, I don't know, Franklin's memories didn't show enough clarity to be sure before the emotions invaded and he attacked to ease the hunger. Harry leaned back in his chair and stared at the ceiling. He felt Malfoy shift and wondered for a moment if he was exposing the line of his throat. But he had something else to think about, something even more important than Malfoy and keeping tabs on him. Strange to think that he could think that and mean it. "Yes," he said at last, "I thought I heard. There was a rumor, months ago. They were developing a potion like that. I thought it was only a rumor."
"You should have reported it to me,"
Malfoy's voice whispered and dragged. "Yes," Harry said, "I forgot about it, because it was before they made me your negotiator, but I should have." Silence. Silence that also whispered and dragged. Harry lowered his head to see Malfoy standing in front of him. He was too tired to start. "What?" he asked, rising to his feet. This was a mess. The ministry would press for an immediate attack on Malfoy's flock, and Harry didn't know how he was supposed to stop it. His mind was distant, floating in a dark sea that he mostly pulled himself from when he came here. He had to concentrate on the reality of what Malfoy was and what his house was like, or he wouldn't survive it.
"You needn't," Malfoy said.
"What?" Harry shook his head. "Speak to the ministry? Go back to the ministry?" Malfoy tipped his head forward as if to keep his throat from the fangs of another dominant vampire. And Harry sighed. "This was the job I signed up for. If not this exact one, then one like it, when I became an aura." Malfoy glided away from him and turned his back. Harry opened his mouth, then closed it. He could ask to know the answer, but if Malfoy wanted him to know why he was upset, he could also say it. And he was probably upset because his flock was now in greater danger than ever. Sending an aura out with the potion in his bloodstream was asking for trouble with the vampires. And given how large Malfoy's flock was, there was a greater chance that the attacker would come from it. Harry had agreed to become negotiator in the first place, to prevent that trouble from springing up between Malfoy's vampires and the ministry. He'd failed. He swallowed against the acid taste of failure in his throat and half bowed his head to Malfoy. "I'll bring you a solution, I promise. May I come back before the third if I need to speak to you?" Malfoy stood so still that Harry would have missed the tiny tilt of his head if he hadn't been looking for it. If he could look anywhere but Malfoy, as the trouble receded from his mind and he thought about it again. If Malfoy hadn't brought his head down to protect his throat, it had been a knot. Malfoy had given things to him. Advice and invitations and stares. Harry had given back what he could, but he had never done this. He stepped nearer Malfoy anyway, moving the way he imagined a deer would when sneaking through a pack of sleeping wolves, and rested his hand on Malfoy's shoulder. Denser bone than humans, he thought. Colder flesh, but something that made him close his eyes and have to fight the impulse to rest there, rest head and hand and burdens.
"Thank you," he whispered,
that you might want me here, that you might offer to shelter me from the ministry, even with as much as it would cost your flock, means a lot." Malfoy glanced back at him, twisting his head around without moving his body. His neck appeared boneless when he did that, Harry thought, and the muscles in his stomach contracted with an emotion he would not identify, because he didn't want to. "You don't understand everything," Malfoy said. "No," Harry said simply. "I don't understand why you'd offered me all you have, and I don't understand everything that I've done in response, and I don't understand how to keep your flock safe." Malfoy showed his fangs. "And I don't understand why you go back." Harry shook his head and lifted his hand. His skin yearned for the cold he had touched, the way it sometimes yearned for the warmth of a human lover when he moved away from one in the same bed. He swallowed and flexed his hand and ignored, once again, the bending and bowing of muscles in his body that had no business doing that. "I do my job," he said. "That's still most important." "My senses," Malfoy said, "are keen enough to hear unspoken words." He did not gesture. He did not move. He did nothing but stare. Harry was the one who turned his back and retreated from the room, not running deliberately. His head up and his blank stare fixed on the walls. Unspoken words, like "for now."